Farm Talk on the radio. I'm Mick Kerr, and today, once more, we are getting everybody rounded up to head to the Lake Region Roundup next week. It's a big time in Devil's Lake. Right now, we're going to visit with a guy. Most people go to Devil's Lake for Lake Region Roundup. Here's a guy who's already been there and back. North Dakota State University bioenergy and bioproducts economist, Dr. Dave Riplinger. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mick.
So, how much snow did you see back in the home country?
You know, not too much. There was about a foot of snow, but it was some pretty heavy stuff. Took my father-in-law about half a day to dig out and get to Highway 2 so we could come pick up his grandkids.
Wow.
So it was a bit, it was a pretty good shot, but nothing like they've seen in the western part of the state. So count my blessings.
Yeah, and whatever it takes to let the kids see the granddad then.
Yeah, you know it.
That's what it's all about. That's good. All righty. Well, next week is the big Lake Region Roundup, and you're one of the presenters, and your title I see is Oil and Gas, which I think is not bio. Well, it is bioenergy, because once upon a time it was a forest, I guess. But how does this all play into your specialty of the bioenergy economy?
Well, you know, it's strongly related. My background was in agriculture, and almost immediately on beginning my work in biofuels, bioenergy, and bioproducts, I realized just how important it is, not only for myself, but for farmers and others in the state, to understand energy and how it impacts agriculture. And, you know, I follow the oil markets really closely now, natural gas markets really closely, for two reasons. One, agriculture is a major user of energy. I know farmers may think about it, but might not, is, you know, all the diesel fuel used, all of the anhydrous ammonia used. I mean, that's all energy from a broad perspective. And, you know, across the state of North Dakota, across the country and world, we use a lot of energy to produce the food and fiber and everything else that that consumers count on us to supply. The other is, of course, with biofuels, especially corn and biodiesel, especially that from soybean oil, you know, agriculture produces a lot of energy now. You know, about 10% of the energy that consumers use when they travel is now coming from corn ethanol, and that's a big deal.
Can we go to 15 anytime soon, or what's holding the U.S. gas pump back from going to 15 from 10?
You know, the interesting thing is, so there's a lot of challenges of getting the fuel out to the consumer. You know, one of the things that's kind of first and foremost is the blend pumps and then getting it into a vehicle that can use it. Most vehicles now can take E15, newer vehicles can use E15. One of the last remaining barriers, in addition to, you know, getting it to the pump, is some EPA rules regarding vapor pressure and reed vapor pressure and all these interesting regulatory fuel-related things that I don't quite understand because I'm an economist. But that's one of the last regulatory challenges, and then it's just making sure that we have the infrastructure to get it out. I'm pretty optimistic that in the next 10 years or so, that will probably happen as oil and energy prices increase. That will take advantage of what remains a pretty low cost energy source in corn ethanol.
Yeah, and that reed vapor pressure, that is, I think they intentionally made it confusing because it has nothing to do with a clarinet or saxophone.
Well, that's exactly right. And every industry has their jargon to kind of make it their own. But that's one of the big remaining challenges. And in addition to, you know, a lot of automobile manufacturers being very concerned about misfueling and those types of issues, which I can definitely understand.
Yeah. Well, eventually, all of the cars will be on the road, except for the classic cars, I guess, are going to be able to burn E15 or even E30 or even E85. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. I mean, I think that, you know, we had this vision about a decade ago that was going to come a little bit sooner than it has. But, of course, you know, right now the vehicles coming off the line in Detroit or in Japan are, for the most part, able to take these higher blends of ethanol, which is a great potential home for corn.
Right on. Now, one of the headlines at the end of 2016 is Iowa had a record ethanol production. I don't know if you have the numbers for the rest of the upper Midwest states in front of you or nearby, but how'd we do?
Well, we're going like gangbusters. And so if you think about two issues, one is the American farmer did another great job this year in producing, you know, record crop of corn. That's got to go somewhere. And so they have, from the refiner standpoint, corn ethanol refiner standpoint, they have very affordable corn and a pretty large home for it in gasoline. We've seen an increase in gasoline consumption over the last 3 years or so. And almost all that gasoline is now E10. And so production is basically at maximum capacity. And not only is it going at maximum capacity, the margins are really good for most corn ethanol refiners. What we're kind of missing in all of this is some sustained belief that there's some support in the market, including on the policy side. And if that was the case and export markets continued to be strong, I mean, we could see the construction of additional corn ethanol plants over the next 5 to 10 years.
Wow, that would be good, because then they'd be modern and the latest and really efficient and probably even more profitable than the ones that are functioning now.
That's true.
Yeah, all right. Also, at the end of the year, the biodiesel tax incentive comes to an end here on Saturday night. Is that going to affect the biodiesel market at all, do you think?
Well, so here's my experience with the biodiesel credit. I actually used to work for Chuck Grassley, and he's the senior senator from Iowa. He's a very good friend of the biodiesel industry. Mm-hmm. The experience has always been that it might expire, but if it does, it'll come back, and not only will it come back, it'll come back retroactively. The biodiesel credit does play a major role in the affordability of biodiesel, because we are taking a lot of vegetable oil primarily and turning it into biodiesel, which has a lot of environmental benefits. But it does need that little bit of help is appreciated by the industry.
And this is, I guess the main complaint, I guess, that the industry gives is that when you don't, you know, you do this right in November or December, you retroactively make it effective to January 1st. That sure provides a lot of uncertainty. And so there's limited, what kind of major multinational or international corporation with deep billion-dollar pockets is going to want to build a plant based on that uncertainty?
Yeah, I mean, it's really poor policy, and we see it. We've seen it in biodiesel. We see it in wind as well, where you have these on-again, off-again policies and regulations, and it's just a difficult environment to do business. And even while I say I expect that it'll be back, and if there's a lull, there'll be a retroactive, a retroactive part of that policy, that's not a sure thing. Yeah. And like you said, that's a difficult environment to do business, and one that, you know, probably if we were all trying to be honest dealers, it's something you just deal with one way or another and try and have some certainty in policy coming out of Washington.
Well, Detroit wouldn't manufacture cars, and Walmart wouldn't operate under that type of policy.
No, absolutely. Well, imagine if every couple of weeks you didn't know exactly what you're going to be paid.
Yeah.
But, you know, we expect everything else to go as planned, and it's tough. And that's one of the things we've seen, you know, as we see energy prices rebound. You know, what are the investments going to be? And actually, we see this with, not to go too far into fossil fuels, but with Dakota Access Pipeline, the uncertainty in permitting and regulation makes it, or at least has made it difficult to do business.
Very good point. All righty. Hey, there are a couple of years, of course, the focus of renewable fuels and bioenergy, of course, is ethanol and biodiesel, but another aspect is energy beets, which gathered a few headlines a couple years ago. Where's the energy beet project at this point?
Yeah, within North Dakota, it's a little bit quiet. We've seen, obviously, you know, low energy prices for the last 2.5 years. You know, that's made any project in energy more difficult. We see that in the Bakken. But, you know, we're seeing those prices starting to rebound. And so the economics of almost any ethanol production, you know, from beet or otherwise, look a lot more interesting. And so we'll see. To me, one of the bigger questions is what are the long-term outlook for oil prices? And if those remain high or grow, for gasoline prices to remain high, you know, it does open up that opportunity for ethanol made from a variety of feedstocks, including energy beets.
Yeah, well, the original vision was to build maybe 10 or 12 small plants scattered all across the state where mm-hmm. guys could grow hey, out around north of Dickinson, they could grow beets. A different kind of a beet, not a sugar beet, but a beet made to produce ethanol. So I guess, is that vision still doable?
Yeah, you know, I think long run, if we look at the energy needs of the American consumer, the American motorist, and the likely, you know, continued increased cost of fossil fuels, either through just supply, demand, and technology or policy, we're gonna need to continue to transition to an ever greener source or renewable source of energy. And if we look at a map and we realize that some places are really good at growing corn, but some aren't quite as good, you know, what other feedstocks or crops could we grow in those areas? Well, for much of the northern United States, Canada, other parts of the world, the beet is a super crop. It can be very productive, and it's really easy to turn the sugar in the beet into ethanol.
Right on. Dave Ripplinger, NDSU bioenergy and bioproducts economist, presenting 1 week from today at the Lake Region Roundup. You'll be on at 9 a.m., and anybody with interest in that or just pick to go to, let's see, you're in the gym. So that's
I am.
All right, that's where the place to go. Dave, thanks a lot. I know you had a great Christmas. I hope you have a happy new year.
Great. Thanks, Mick. You too.
You bet. Talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye now.